From the Orion Policy Institute, this is Orion Talks. Our podcast brings together experts for a conversation about events shaping the world at the local, national, and global levels. Tune in as we discuss foreign policy, security, human rights, political and economic development, and various other issues.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Orion Talks. I'm your host, Marta Furlan. Today, I'm joined by David Desroches. David Desroches is an associate professor at the Near East South Asia Center for Security Studies. Prior to this, he was the director responsible for defense policy concerning Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain, Oman, the UAE, and Yemen. Prior to this assignment, he has served in the Office of the Secretary of Defense as the Department of Defense liaison to the Department of Homeland Security, as the Senior Country Director for Pakistan, as the NATO Operations Director, and Deputy Director for Peacekeeping. A British Marshall Scholar, he has also attended the Federal Executive Institute, the German Staff College's Higher Office Seminar, the US Army John F. Kennedy Special Warfare School, and the US Army Command and General Staff College. An Airborne Ranger in the Army Reserve, he was awarded the Bronze Star for service in Afghanistan. He has commanded conventional and special operations parachute units and has served on the US Special Operations Command staff, as well as the Joint Staff. Thank you for joining us and welcome to Orion Talks, David.
Thanks for having me.
So today we are going to talk about Yemen, trying to unpack and make sense of some of the most recent events.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, since the start of the Hamas-Israeli war in October 2023, the Houthis have obtained unprecedented international attention for their attacks against the ships transiting through the Red Sea for disrupting maritime traffic there. And to understand the extent of the Red Sea importance to global trade, we can just think that 12% of global trade passes through the Red Sea, including 30% of global container traffic. Now, understandably, this has posed a series of challenges to both regional countries and global powers. And we have seen that over the past year, the US has been interrogating itself on how to best approach the Yemeni file and the Houthis. Now, can you guide us through Trump's approach toward the Houthis and towards Yemen during the first Trump presidency so that we can take a look back in time and understand what was the US approach back then?
Right. So, the Houthis were a tertiary concern to Trump, I think, during his first administration. Saudi-led, Saudi and Emirati-led intervention against the Houthis was under the Biden administration. And the my guess, and we haven't seen this formally established yet, was that this happened right after the JCPOA was announced. So I think that the Saudis, the Emiratis, all the Gulf Arabs were very, very unhappy with the JCPOA because it was, you know, in their sense, it was an agreement that the United States made in their neighborhood, compromising their security interests without consulting with them. And so immediately after that happening, the Biden administration provided support. The Saudis announced that they were going to go to war against the Houthis, and the Biden administration, or the Barack Obama administration, excuse me, said, okay, we will support you. And initially they did with, you know, quite extensively with expedited transfer of logistics from U.S. stockpiles, things like bombs and air-to-surface missiles, accuracy kits for bombs, air-to-air refueling, and the provision of all kinds of battlefield intelligence. And this was done in an extremely expedited manner. After the fact, we found out, for example, that the fuel provided through air-to-air refueling, the United States was supposed to be paid back for that, but they did it so quickly that they didn't keep accurate records. We didn't even know how much we had given to the Saudi, Emirati, and other forces attacking the Houthis. Over time, as that campaign became ground on, became less and less popular, the Obama administration scaled back its support. And I think when Trump took office the first time, He viewed this as sort of an Obama administration problem, and it kind of went to the back burner. He didn't really make any major changes or shifts. When there was an attack on the Abqaiq refinery, which was launched from Iran, not from Yemen, in Saudi Arabia, this was an existential moment of threat for the Saudis. Trump did order the return of some limited U.S. combat forces to Saudi Arabia. They had not been present there since 2003, but he did not direct a kinetic action against Iran, which I think our partners in the region, the Saudis, expected. Later on, when the Houthis fired ballistic missiles at Abu Dhabi and Dubai, I was on Emirati television the day after that, and the questions I was being asked was were they were like, "Well, will the United States respond against the Houthis with a B-52 strike, or will they use Tomahawk launch missiles?" And I was like, "We're not going to do anything. This is your problem." And that was they were dumbfounded by that. Dumbfounded by that. I think throughout the Biden administration, from Trump's perspective, he viewed Biden's foreign policy as ineffective, as weak, and as encouraging Iran. Most of Biden's Middle East policy, for at least the first part of his presidency, seemed to be trying to renounce what Trump had done and to get American policy back to where it was under the Barack Obama administration. And it took a few years to realize that the toothpaste wasn't going back into the tube. Then, of course, you had the breakout of the Gaza war. That upset everybody's calculus. Prior to that, you had a notable success under the Biden administration, where Lebanese Hezbollah basically came to an agreement with Israel over the exploration of natural gas, offshore natural gas. That was unthinkable. But then you had another issue, and the Houthis started sinking civilian container ships, basically making the Red Sea impassable for civilian commerce. I think when Trump came to office the second time, he said, "Okay, this is a product of weakness, of inconsistency, and I am going to solve this by exerting force in a manner that will lead the Houthis and their Iranian sponsors to cease this sort of behavior."
Thank you. So I'm going to pick up on your final point. So as Trump returned to the presidency, he re-designated the Houthis as an FTO, and most recently, days ago, he launched new strikes against Houthi targets in Yemen. Can you help us to make sense of this approach? Why these renewed attacks? What is their intended objective? And what's your assessment of that? Like, to what extent do you expect them to be successful in supporting the strategy that is behind them?
So I think that by any objective assessment of what a foreign terrorist organization is, the Houthis qualify. They have seized power illegitimately. They are a repressive government. The UN has documented that they divert aid away from people who need it and use it to reward their followers. They're attacking civilian installations. They attack civilian facilities in Saudi Arabia. They're attacking civilian shipping in the Gulf. Through most of the first Trump administration, that same logic applied. But the problem was the international community, particularly the aid and relief community, said, "Look, understand that, but if you do this designation, it will complicate our work so much." Basically, the Houthis managed to take the aid process hostage to the point where the aid community said, "If you designate the Houthis as a foreign terrorist organization, it will complicate our work." And contrary to what people, the common view that a lot of people have, Trump actually does listen to people. And I think he listened to them for most of his presidency. When he lost the presidency and it was apparent that he was going to have to leave, in his last week, he designated the Houthis as a terrorist organization. I can't prove this. I personally think that he was doing that just for domestic reasons, that he wanted to run again and he wanted to be in the position of saying, "The Biden administration reversed this, their first day in office. You see, they're soft on terrorism." I think it was for domestic reasons. Fast forward, Trump wins the White House again. The situation has changed. Now the Houthis are firing missiles and rockets into Israel, and they have interdicted shipping. They are radically complicating the humanitarian relief effort for Sudan, which we don't talk about. They're depriving the Egyptian government, a key partner, of billions of dollars of Suez Canal transit fees. And I think that the calculus, together with the political imperative of portraying Biden as weak on terrorism because he did that, I think that there was both a political calculus as well as a strategic calculus that made the foreign terrorist designation inevitable.
And what's your expectation in terms of this new approach brought forward by the Trump administration?
Well, I think it will be more effective. I think it will be more effective, has a greater chance of success than the Biden approach. President Biden's approach was limited really by his own party, which was within the Democrat Party. There's a significant faction that does not want to see any military action against in the Middle East or against Iran without a congressional authorization. And this has always been an issue. There's some Republicans that feel the same way as well, that why are there's no authorization to go to war against. There was an authorization for use of military force in the wake of the 9/11 attacks, and there is a significant body of opinion in the United States that feels that that's been twisted to wrongly justify the invasion of Iraq in 2003, actions against Iran, actions against ISIS, and possible confrontation with Iran's Iranian proxies in Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, and elsewhere. President Biden, had a fractured caucus, but the energy in his congressional delegation in particular is with younger people who want to have a vote in Congress before any expanded military case. And so I think that that led his reaction to the Houthi attacks on civilian shipping to be extremely limited. If you go through the Central Command press releases, they all are lawyered. They tend to say things like this was in response to an attack on U.S. warships, and they paraphrase the language in the War Powers Act that says these are the instances where the president does not have to go to Congress. And what you also see is that the targets chosen generally were directly related to the attacks on shipping. They were missile launch facilities, missiles themselves, missile storage and production facilities, and radar elements used to guide this. President Trump's approach is to say, okay, just playing defense, just swatting down things coming at us is not deterring the Houthis. So what we need to do is go after their headquarters and their leadership. And he specifically said that. And the Central Command targeting set and the videos they produce have shown them attacking leadership facilities. Still unclear whether that will achieve the desired deterrent effect. We saw, in Vietnam, this idea that we were applying an American concept of deterrence on people that just didn't think that way. But I think that it stands a greater chance of success than just swatting down missiles coming at ships.
Thank you. Also, Trump posted a few days ago on his social media, I'm quoting, "Every shot fired by the Houthis will be looked upon from this point forward as being a shot fired from the weapons and leadership of Iran." So, can you help us to understand a bit better this persistent connection between the Yemeni file and the Iran file in the wider approach to the region, and to what extent you think it's successful or?
Well, the Houthis do not have the ability to conduct attacks out of their borders without Iranian assistance. That just does not exist. The Iranians are the key enablers of the Houthi attacks against civilian shipping and the key enablers of Houthi attacks against Saudi Arabia, against the UAE. However, if one were to rank order Iranian proxies by degree of Iranian control, most analysts agree that the Houthis are the proxy group that Iran has the least amount of directive control over. So what you've got is that the Iranians may not be able to dictate actions to the Houthis the way they were to Lebanese Hezbollah, but it is undeniable that the Houthis would not be able to take the kind of action we're seeing without Iranian support. So I think Arab governments in the region have long said, they from the start of the Biden administration response, they said you're attacking tentacles, not the head of the octopus. And I think that there is a general consensus among Arab security analysts that why are you stomping out brush fires when you've got somebody running around with a flamethrower, and that somebody is Iran. And I think that the Trump administration thinking is more in congruence with that than the Biden administration's was.
Thank you. And now, reflecting on the fact that the Yemeni conflict started as a civil war between the Houthis and the internationally recognized government, I'm interested in hearing from you whether you believe that Trump administration has an interest and an approach for Yemen in terms of domestic dynamics, in terms of resolving the conflict and restarting perhaps some of the talks that had begun between the Houthis and Saudi Arabia.
This is an area where I'm at a little bit of an analytical weakness because the Trump turning his back on so much of the leadership that he had, Mike Pompeo, things like that, people who worked for him in the first term to the second term, is a little jarring. And so it's a bit of an analytical void right now. I mean, it's hard to believe it, but Trump's only been president for 6 weeks. And, everybody's like, ooh, I mean, people are talking like they've been through 8 years of him. We still don't really know. A lot of his policies are still taking shape. During his first term, I believe Tim Lender King, the special envoy, who I think he inherited from Barack Obama, remained all the way through that. And he kept that portfolio through the Trump administration and through the Biden administration. He's still at the State Department Bureau. So unusually for the U.S. government, he's actually been elevated. But we actually have a lot of continuity on Yemen within the State Department. And of course, our military commands, we have a lot of turnover within military organizations, but institutionally, our military commands tend to have a lot of institutional knowledge that will carry forward. But there has been, I think, a strategic decision that being made that the means by which we've sought to establish deterrence on the Houthis have been ineffective in the past. And unfortunately, when you reach that choice, you only have two options. One is to say this isn't worth it and walk away. And the second option is to say, okay, we need to put the screws on. And that means that you either do the same thing more intensively, which he seems to be doing, saying that this is going to be not just a one-off, one missile fired at a U.S. ship, one airstrike, but this is going to be a sustained campaign intensively. But also you broaden the target span, and he's done that by saying we're also targeting headquarters and leadership.
Thank you. And what about Egypt and Saudi Arabia? Where are they standing in Trump's approach to the Yemeni issue, Iran, and the Gulf?
Well, I think that there's here we have to differentiate between what countries say publicly and what they say privately. Most Saudis are saying nobody publicly wants to get involved in this because the Houthis quite brilliantly have tried to tie this into the Gaza war, which Arab public opinion is universally against support of Israel in the Gaza war. So the Houthis have effectively done this, and this is an old thing. I mean, when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, he said he was doing it because the road through Jerusalem ran through Kuwait City. I mean, it's a standard ploy, but it's still resonant. And even Saudi Arabia, public opinion does matter. Privately, the Saudis are indulging in a little bit of Schadenfreude. And what they're basically saying is, well, if you'd supported us, you wouldn't have this problem. We knew, and now you're finding out, but you left us hanging, and we're not going to solve your problem for you. And they're looking to move ahead and try to come to an agreement with the Houthis and see some sort of stability in Yemen. The Egyptians are a little different. I was on an Egyptian television network the other night, and like three times the anchor was telling me something I'd never heard before, which I think is not true, that the initial US airstrikes were conducted in conjunction with Israeli strikes. And I was like, no, I don't think so. You know, I read everything I see. I haven't seen that. And also, you know, what I finally did, you know, after them coming back and saying, well, there are reports. And I'm like, well, they're not reports that I've seen. After finally coming back, I said, look, you know, Israel's a very small country. They have a lot of people trying to kill them much closer to them. Why would they divert some of their scarce assets to go this great distance away when the United States is already doing it? But, you know, the fact that it was being said publicly on an Egyptian network, and, you know, Egyptian networks don't have a great degree of independence from the state, would indicate that either a lot of people in Egypt believe that, or the authorities in Egypt believe that, or the authorities in Egypt believe that a lot of people in Egypt believe it and they want to do it. And the Egyptians have also strangely been very quiet about, you know, Egypt is perennially on the verge of economic collapse. The Egyptian state is always looking for money, and they've lost $7 billion in Suez Canal transit fees because of this. But they don't make a thing about it, and I think that shows just how much animus there is towards the Israelis and the Israeli conduct of the Gaza war.
Thank you. This was super interesting. And before I conclude, I will just want to ask you, what are your thoughts in terms of possible implications now for dynamics in Yemen, in the Gulf, in the Red Sea region, now that we have this new president taking a new approach?
Well, I think, you know, the United States is a seafaring nation. And, you know, I mean, I was in the army, as you noted, but you know, if you read the US Constitution, one of the things that the US government has to do is establish a navy, but we raise an army when we need it. You know, we view our national prosperity based on maritime trade. And I don't think that any president can tolerate a non-state actor asserting a right to just shut down international shipping in a place like this. So I think that it's quite possible, had Joe Biden been reelected to a second term, that we would see an escalation against the Houthis, that he'd say, okay, now that my problems are, you know, my election problems have been dealt with, just because this state is unacceptable, the state of affairs. The Houthis have said they're doing this in support of Israel, but, or I'm sorry, in support of the Palestinians. But having shown that they have the ability to get international attention, they're not going to cast this tool aside. I think that should peace break out between the Israelis and the Palestinians, I think they'll find another pretext because it keeps them at the front of the agenda and it causes them to be dealt with. And you know, and it could be anything. I you know, they could find any pretext. So I do think that they will have to be forcibly deterred from interfering with civilian shipping. And that shouldn't be a controversial statement. I mean, that's a statement of international norms. But unfortunately, we're in an era where what had been non-controversial is viewed as inflammatory. So I think we'll see how this plays out, but I don't think that Trump will, I think his patience to teach the Houthis a lesson will extend at least into months, potentially. I don't think this is something that he will reevaluate in a week and say, oh, well, that didn't work. I think that he's determined to make a point, and I think that, you know, it's going to be a rough couple of months for the Houthis.
Thank you, David, for this fascinating conversation. It was great to have you as a guest on Orion Talks.
Thank you.
And many thanks to all of our listeners for staying with us for another episode.